Hi, I'm Gabby. Welcome to the Happier Life Project, brought to you by the free award-winning mental health and wellness app, My Possible Self. If you're listening to this episode close to its release date, then you may or may not know we're in Mental Health Awareness Week, which takes place from the 13th to the 19th of May this year, 2024. This year's theme, as set by the Mental Health Foundation, is movement, moving for our mental health, which is what this episode is all about. Now, if you're a regular listener to the Happier Life Project, full disclosure, at the start of the year, a lot of this we covered in our episode, New Year, New Relationship with Exercise, with the mental health PT, Dan Hancock. However, since then, we're thrilled we've had a bunch of new listeners that might not have heard that interview. And let's be honest, who remembers much from a podcast they heard over 5 months ago anyway? So this will serve as a great refresher during Mental Health Awareness Week, because honestly, it's all such helpful and interesting stuff. And this year's theme being movement, moving more for our mental health, me and the team thought, you know what? This is something everybody should be listening to. And breaking news, if you fancy watching this episode, you can do so on the My Possible Self app or directly on My Possible Self's YouTube channel. Dan Hancock, aka the Mental Health PT, began to do extensive research on the reasons why more people weren't exercising and why people were so intimidated by going to the gym. He created multiple incentives, campaigns and programs, all of which were free of charge, in order to help more people struggling with their mental health make it through the gym doors and be able to experience the endless transferable benefits of exercise. Frustrated by the lack of mental health support available for gym goers, Dan created the world's first mental health and exercise coaching certificate for personal trainers, which is revitalising the health of millions across the UK. Dan passionately believes in doing what works for you and you enjoy is the key to a healthy, long-lasting relationship with exercise. One of the most important things you can do to help protect your mental health is regular movement. But for a variety of reasons, many of us do struggle to move enough. If you're in that camp, hopefully this episode will inspire you. So, ready to find a healthier, happier you? Let's get started.
Hello.
Hey, Dan. Welcome to the Happier Life Project. Dan Hancock, aka the Mental Health PT.
How are you doing? Thanks so much for having me.
Everybody knows exercise and movement is good for mental health, but yet most people don't. That's not why they do it. It's more seen as a Brucey bonus, right? It's more for cosmetic, aesthetic reasons that people want to train.
Yeah, absolutely. You've hit the nail on the head. So essentially, the exercise is one of the best tools, if not the best tool, to improve our mental health. There was a recent huge meta-analysis, so it was over 1,000 studies. They combined and they look at the results, and they found that exercise was 1.5 times more effective at treating or managing poor mental health and mental illness than therapy or medication alone. Yet, if you were to, you know, train as a personal trainer, mental health isn't mentioned once in the qualifications that you need to go and, you know, work on the gym floor. And it's got the term personal for a reason. You know, it's a very personalized approach, and yet coaches are, you know, basically putting people's health in their hands, people's lives in their hands, yet they're not equipped to deal with one of the main reasons why people are coming to exercise. So, you know, it started from a place of frustration for myself. You know, I was having these sessions and I had this like huge desire to want to help people. You know, exercise had been a gift to me and I wanted to share that gift with other people. And that's one of the main reasons why people actually become a personal trainer. Exercise has helped them, therefore they want to help other people. And yet I soon realized that I absolutely was not equipped whatsoever to be able to deal with the complexities of human behavior, to be able to deal with the emotional reasons why people want to exercise or feel like they can't exercise or get a result. And it was just becoming increasingly obvious that people were coming to me with a lot more complex issues. You know, someone may come to me, you know, the traditional most common reason for someone reaching out would be, I want to lose weight, I want to lose fat, I want to change my body image. They send you a picture of an influencer saying, help me look like this. But when you peel back the layers, I'm not necessarily saying this is a negative motive, but it's nothing to do with that. It's to do with low confidence, low self-worth, a lack of identity, confusion over their identity, and body image issues, body dysmorphic disorder, and all these things that are underlying. So it was born out of frustration. And luckily, you know, for us now, people, as soon as we announced what we were doing and we were going to be training up personal trainers to be able to help their clients with their mental health, everyone was like, oh, right, this makes sense. So that happened a few years ago now. And yeah, we're well on our way to transforming the fitness industry.
Let's talk about like goal setting. And like you touched upon, most of them are, I want to drop X amount of pounds, I want to get shredded. But it might not necessarily be the crux of the issue. It is maybe something underlying, such as low self-esteem. And so perhaps sometimes if they do lose the weight or do gain the muscle or whatever the goal is, then that does give the self-esteem a boost. But then is that a short-term fix? What happens if, in order to get this body... For example, I recorded earlier this week a couple of episodes with a sports nutritionalist called Renee McGregor, and we were talking about orthorexia. And of course, we're over obsessive working out is as much as a problem for orthorexics as the clean eating and the restriction diets. And she gave Davina McCall as an example of somebody she said, in her own words, clearly had orthorexia because she was addicted to exercise. She's released a book on completely eliminating sugar. And yet she made me think about the people looking at Davina going, she looks incredible, I want to look like her. But then it's so unachievable unless you have got the luxury of 3 hours a day that you can dedicate to exercising like that. And you have maybe got access to somebody that can help you with the cooking or whatever, and then you've also got the pressure of being in the public eye. If you know, it's kind of setting yourself up for failure, isn't it, as well? So have you seen a lot of that too? I'd imagine so.
Absolutely. It's interesting, actually. So there's a new coined term now above orthorexia, which is healthy orthorexia, which is basically individuals who, again, they'll obsessively track their calories, they'll obsessively cut out foods, they'll obsessively exercise, but people actually think that that's healthy. So it's got the term healthy in front of it, and it's absolutely not, because it's one of the biggest predetermining factors to obsessive compulsive disorder, body dysmorphic disorder, and eating disorders. The issue is, Gabby, that say, for example, imagine you reached out to me as a coach and you said, Dan, I want to, you know, drop weight, then I'm going to be happy. I want to change my body shape and I'm going to be happy. If I was to turn around to you and say, right, okay, well, how about I help you become the happiest, most confident, most self-assured, most energetic, and you know, version of yourself that you've ever been, right? I'll give you all of these desirable traits, characteristics, lifestyle, behaviors that are going to make you the happiest you've ever been, right? But here's the catch. I don't change the way that you look. Would you still accept that? And would you still want that?
Oh, now I'm scared to answer.
Well, the answer is.
Yeah, go on. Tell me what the answer is.
The answer is that, of all of, you know, the available research that we've got, pretty much everyone would say yes. They would take all of those lifestyle changes, traits, internal happiness without changing the way that they look. So what that tells us then is actually looking a certain way isn't the true goal. That's what individuals think is going to make them happy. So if they're coming, you know, from a place of low self-worth, insecurity, low confidence, which, we'll face it, most people do. A lot of people, you know, struggle finding their way in the world with imposter syndrome and They end up criticizing their body because they don't like where they are in life. But if they've just answered that question and showed, well, actually, you know, it's nothing to do with the way that I look, I just want to be happy and confident. When they go and set a body image goal as their goal, what then happens is, because that's not actually their true goal, the true goal is to be happy, confident, experience love, they're therefore not going to be as motivated to achieve it. Therefore, they're more likely to skip sessions. They're more likely to fall out of love with the gym. They're then more likely to feel guilty and feel shamed about their exercise journey, which ends up increasing, you know, problematic relationships with exercise and nutrition. So the issue that we have is that we live in a materialistic world, and everyone is told, you know, these celebrities, these supermodels, these influencers are happy because they look a certain way. People think that that's what's going to make them happy. But ultimately, looking a certain way is what's known as an extrinsic goal. So an extrinsic goal is something external. It's, you know, a reward, an achievement. It's getting some sort of praise. And body image goals fit into that. What we want individuals to be able to do is exercise for intrinsic reasons, which is the exercising for the sheer love of exercise, exercising because they enjoy it, it makes them feel good. And what ends up happening is, because then there's not this obscure materialistic goal, these individuals are more likely to exercise because they want to, not because they feel that they have to. Exercise is seen as a privilege rather than a punishment, and they're more likely to stick to it because they love it, be consistent, build habituation, and achieve their goals. So the issue then is that majority of people are exercising for the wrong reasons. And in January in particular, 95% of New Year's resolutions are fitness related. Yet only 10% of these people will last past month three. And it's because majority of the time, there's lots of other factors, but majority of the time it's because they haven't set the right goal.
So interesting. So then in terms of like the exercise itself, is it still the same type of exercise, but it's just the motivation behind why you're doing it is different?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. So ultimately, the exercise doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's whatever you do that you enjoy, whatever you do that you enjoy. And I say this sometimes to some coaches and clients and lots of different people, and it's kind of like a light bulb moment, but it just kind of makes sense. It's like, majority of the time people treat exercise as a means to an end. I have to exercise to do this. And anything that's a means to an end that you're not actually, you know, really wanting to do, of course you're not going to stick to it. You know, if you love podcasting, you love hosting, if you hated it, you're not going to stick to it, are you? And it's the exact same thing with exercise. So ultimately the goal is, one, exactly what you've said there, for individuals to find the real goal that they can work towards, the real kind of core driving motivator, which is always deeper than body image. You know, it's body image is surface level for a reason. We want to get deeper. And then it's simply, it sounds so simplistic, but finding a form of exercise that they absolutely love. You know, so if the only time they can work out is at 6 in the morning, they're not going to have to be dragging themselves out of bed being like, oh, you know, I can't even be bothered doing this, but I have to because I want to drop X amount of pounds. It's no, you know what? I can't wait. This exercise makes me feel great. It makes me feel empowered. It makes me feel inspired. It makes me feel amazing afterwards. I exercise to improve my mental health. Therefore, boom, I'm just going to get up and go.
What if, even if you do want to exercise for, let's say, mental health reasons to improve yourself there, what if it's still a slog? I say this with my own experience. I signed up to like an app that did these programs, and it was like, I just cannot go to sleep before midnight. I just can't. So I was having to get up at 6 to train, and I was like, kill me now. And then the rest of the day was ruined because I hadn't had enough sleep, but I was setting my alarm and I was literally dragging myself out. And it got to the point where I was like, you know what? I'm going to do these on catch up later in the day because my sleep is also incredibly important for my physical and mental health. And it's like, I can't change. I can't go to bed at 9 p.m. I just can't. It's not how I'm wired. But like, Yeah, that motivation to get up, everybody struggles with, I think, maybe bar people like, do you even struggle with it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, there's a couple of, so it's a great question. Again, there's a couple of different factors that play into this. So look, obviously we're not all going to be able to just roll out of bed and you'll be full of energy and be like, boom, we want to go. So the most important things are the things that I've discussed already. Like if you love it, if like you really love it, you know it's going to benefit you for the rest of the day. And it's became this thing that you feel like you can't live without, but in a healthy way. That's the first thing. That's going to help you get up in the morning and get up and go, or whenever you decide that you want to exercise. The other reason why some people can't be fully consistent with it is simply because it's not been ingrained as a habit yet. So on average, it takes 66 days to build a habit. So on average, about 66 days to build a habit. Now, obviously, this can vary depending on what the habit is. And for a lot of people who will really struggle to be able to get up and go and exercise, it's actually got nothing to do with the exercise. Exercise is blamed because that's the thing that seems difficult, right? But it's not actually exercise that's difficult. It's the fact of switching into the new habit. It's the fact of allowing your brain to switch direction. That's what the difficult thing is, because essentially it's just not being conditioned or ingrained enough to be able to make that happen. And then what ends up happening is once that on average 66 days has passed, then it's actually going to be easier than not doing it. That, you know, that's when your body clock will start to wake you up. That's when there's lots of other factors in play as well. But I think what's really important as well is it's not necessarily, a lot of people think that like discipline, dedication, consistency, resilience is about showing up every single day. And it's absolutely not. I would classify those things as actually knowing when to rest, exactly like what you said there, knowing when to lie in, knowing when actually, you know what, I'm not going to go to the gym today because I feel like I have to, and I'm putting pressure on myself. For my mental health today, not going is probably better so that I'm not becoming obsessive with it. So being adaptable is key as well. Getting up and listening to your body and knowing, is it an excuse? Am I letting myself off the hook? Or is my brain or my body sending me signals that I should be listening to rest?
So then, what about for people listening that perhaps are overweight and that have, maybe had a warning from the doctor and that do need to lose some pounds and do need to get moving in that respect, then you would be the motivation as well as the mental health would be the physical health too, right? So we're not
So,
saying there will be some people that are listening that be like, I know I need to lose weight. This is all, the mental health stuff, great, but also like for my physical health, I could have a heart attack if I don't do something about this,
yeah, absolutely. So again, it's what we need to look at is we need to look at all dimensions of health as one. So if we've got mental health, a lot of people will just see mental health and they'll think of emotional health. But actually, when it comes to mental health, it's an umbrella that will encompass physical health. It will cover, encompass emotional health, but also intellectual, social, spiritual, environmental, and occupational health. So these are all seven dimensions of health. So essentially, if you were to become sick in any way whatsoever, normally, if it's an environmental thing or a social thing, it will be because of one of these markers of health. Something has deteriorated in your life. Obviously, you know, we've got predetermined and preconditioned things that can be genetic, but a lot of the time it's because of the environment or socially something's kind of went wrong. And essentially, when it comes to, there's these seven dimensions of health. Now, this is where a lot of people get confused, because when it comes to weight and body composition, weight and body composition are only one aspect of physical health. So you've got lots of other different aspects of physical health. And in fact, there's actually seven. So if you can imagine weight and body composition as one aspect of physical health, we've got these in a line here. And then out of all of those aspects of physical health is only one out of seven overall health dimensions, if that makes sense. So it's actually quite a small percentage. And it's not to dismiss it or to discredit it or to suggest that, you know, your weight isn't of paramount importance. Of course it is. You know, we want to put less pressure on the heart. We want to make sure that like your cardiovascular system is working really well. We want to make sure there's less strain on the joints. So physical health is vitally important. But actually, when it comes to weight is the thing that's predominantly linked to poor mental health, but it's actually only a small percentage of it. So what we do is we just focus on everything. You know, you focus on the individual as a whole, and it's in absolutely no way to suggest that, you know, weighing yourself can't be healthy in some scenarios. If you have to lose weight, obviously that's something that you should monitor and you should track. But actually, when it comes to the vast majority of individuals, including individuals that may be struggling with obesity, taking into account the social, environmental, and mental factors isn't just important for their overall health, but it's also one of the key indicators to why they may struggle to lose weight in the first place, if that makes sense. So again, I'm going to butcher the study. So this is 100% me not pathologizing, and this is me not to suggest that individuals struggling with obesity will have had to have, you know, been through something traumatic. I'm not suggesting that whatsoever. But it's a very, very high percentage of individuals who really, really struggle with obesity that may have experienced an adverse childhood experience, or may potentially even have less dopamine receptors in the brain, meaning that they're more likely to get dopamine, which is a pleasure response, through food, which suggests that it can be a lot more of an impulsive thing, as opposed to, right, you just need to go in and move more and drop your calories from a physical standpoint. Hopefully that makes sense. And yeah, it's absolutely not to discredit the losing weight standpoint. It's just that we need to look at the bigger, wider picture all the time.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, it makes me think of like stress eating and comfort eating. It's an emotional or, you know, mental problem there, isn't it? That's making you reach for the packet of biscuits and not stopping at one, for example. Gosh, it's making me think like a few things in terms of you and what you're doing. When I think about people who, let's say, treat or look after somebody with a mental health problem, or an emotional problem, they're usually a qualified therapist. And then people that sign up to go to the gym, like, I mean, because I think about this, I've done two 200-hour teacher trainings for yoga, because I'm passionate about yoga, went to India for 9 weeks, and people keep saying to me, so when are you going to teach? And I'm like, in 200 hours, I cannot, knowing what I know about yoga, I don't feel like I could do it justice. Like, I have so much more to learn. And I can't help but think that that is mirrored with the PT certificates that you can get as well, that you can get something that calls you a PT. But the difference between a PT that gets that certificate versus the person that I'm speaking to now that knows all this stuff about the mental and emotional side of health, as well as, it makes me think like, there's not enough of yous, and I know that you're aiming to change that, right? Because that's why you've set up this qualification and training program yourself. Yeah, if you just want to kind of pick up where I'm leaving off here, like, how do we find more of yous? And yeah, tell us more about the work that you're doing to sort of bridge this gap, because it's like you have to be on top of your game physically, but also, you know, really know your stuff mentally to be able to give somebody the kind of support that in an ideal world, if you're going to pay X amount of money for, you know, that it's you're like you said, getting to the root cause.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the term that you used there was so key. It was this bridging the gap. And that's what it is. And look, we've got multiple different sectors for multiple different reasons. Okay. And there's a reason why therapists and counselors need to go and study a degree, put in the hours of work, in order for them to become qualified and safely support individuals, right? There's an absolute, that's a necessity. That has to happen. But the issue is there's sometimes quite a lot of red tape as well. So say, for example, imagine I was coming to you, I'm struggling with my mental health, okay? And I've reached out, I've built up the courage and the bravery to reach out to a local therapist, and that's you in this scenario. Now, although you would have these incredible set of skills, and I promise I'm not dismissing or discrediting the work of therapists, counsellors, because it's life-saving, but this is just an example. On top of all of your set of skills, I may be in that scenario just needing someone to relate to me. Because of a contract you have signed as a licensed mental health professional, you wouldn't be able to say anything personal about your situation and relate. And I know that's not important always, but that means then sometimes there can be a disconnect. And this is why sometimes people will go into a doctor's surgery and reach out and they feel like there's no support. So there's no relatability there. Now, What's then really key is, like what you said, it's about bridging this gap, because there's so many people. I'll tell you a quick story. We were delivering the award in mental health and exercise coaching. So we were down in London, I believe this was about 2 years ago, and we were setting up in this venue to be able to put, you know, another maybe dozen coaches through our award and to be able to train them up with all these skills. And the receptionist was getting a glass of water for us, and she pulled me into the kitchen and I was helping her out. And she said, "Oh, what is it that you're doing?" And I explained to her quickly about what we were doing, and her face just dropped. And I was like, are you okay? And she said one of her work colleagues that worked at this venue had taken their life by suicide a couple of weeks prior. Mm. And she turned to me and she said, but I couldn't do anything. You know, I'm not a counsellor. I couldn't help. Now, obviously, the first thing I did was give her a hug and, you know, make sure that she was all right. And I would never say this to her, but actually that's one of the biggest issues. You don't have to be a mental health professional. We've all got mental health. We can all talk about it. And yeah, sometimes that's not even advising. And one of the first things that we teach our coaches to do, it's basically just improving their listening skills, their human behavioral skills, their interpersonal skills. Because there's so much that you can do without saying a word, which means that these individuals are going to feel safe to speak to you. One of the main issues isn't about individuals opening up to their personal trainer, isn't even to do with, well, what does the PT do off the back of it? Obviously, we have to have clear referral networks and systems in place. But a lot of it is actually just being able to build that emotional connection with the client that a lot of personal trainers do not have. Because it's all about the, what were your steps this week? Did you stick to your calories? Right, we're going to teach you how to squat this week, without realizing that the gym floor is actually the perfect environment for someone to speak about their mental health, because there could be trust there with the coach. They see them as a role model, therefore they want to confide in them. The chemical responses when you exercise, the serotonin, is going to make you more optimistic, more likely to share, you know, the environment, because it's not a doctor's office. It's relaxed. You're standing side on as opposed to front on. So there's all these incredible reasons why individuals are actually opening up to their PTs now already. It's about giving the PTs the, you know, the conversational interpersonal skills to be able to handle that a little bit better. So the great thing about that is, although our role is serious, you know, we're taking on a lot more, we're helping vulnerable individuals, and it's not to be taken lightly. But the great thing is actually, initially, all we need to do is give them some safeguarding training, mental health training, help them to understand people better. And then that gets the ball rolling when it comes to the support that they can give. So the great thing about what we're doing just now is, so, I mean, we've got over 300 coaches just now. We've got close to about 320 now, which on one hand is huge. That's great for a couple of years. When it comes to the fitness industry as a whole, that's minuscule. It's absolutely minuscule.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
How long, sorry, just to cut you off there, but I'm just curious, how long does the training program last? Like, if we've got any PTs listening that might be interested in getting that training.
Yeah, thanks for asking. So the award in itself lasts 12 months. Now, the reason that we've made it this way, as opposed to, you know, you can come along for a couple of weekends and learn, is ultimately there's so much to teach. Similar to like what you said when it comes to like the yoga course. I mean, like 200 hours, it's a lot. But ultimately, there's so much that we can offer. Also, we want to make it as accessible as possible. And a lot of these coaches are busy and running their own business. So we don't want to, you know, bombard them with a really intensive course that lasts a couple of weeks and they've got no time to do anything else. We want to spread out that learning throughout the year. So the way that I like to frame it to PTs, so if there's any PTs listening, is that, yeah, you know, 12 months, it might seem like, oh, I want to get it done sooner, but do you want to get it done sooner? You know, surely you want to actually be able to know how to really help these people in a much deeper way. And also, it's not just about learning, it's about support. So all throughout the year, we're able to help with the practical implementation, the integration, the day in, the day out, the issues that we can actually solve live for them, as opposed to them having to do it on their own. And the other great thing about it is, and I don't actually know many other courses that do it this way, but we fought hard for it to be this way, a PT can start practicing immediately. So they don't need to wait till the end of the 12 months. They need to wait till the end of 12 months to become certified, but they can practice immediately because we're giving them all the support and the safeguarding education first. So they can they can start immediately.
Wow, that's amazing. And I love the fact that you hold space and the that you highlighted the importance of like listening, because I do think that sometimes doesn't get highlighted enough, you know, that it's like, and in fact, actually in my yogic studies, that was one of the things that we learned, was to just hold space without projecting our opinion back, even if it's with the best intentions, like we want to help. It's just actually sometimes all that person needs is like the space, you know, to release, because otherwise it might end up being misdirected and going somewhere else, or you end up confiding with a loved one and then they project and it's not what you want to hear and blah, 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 you know yourself. In terms of like the advertisements and the promos for the diet plans, for the gym packages, and we've talked again, you know, about how this is not necessarily the healthy option, but like, it's easy to get sucked in, isn't it, via social media in particular. What are some of the more harmful things that you've seen? What are some of the red flags that we should be looking out for in terms of like, because I'm not saying that we shouldn't if we want to get healthier. I think that's a great goal to have. But like, how do we make sure that we just don't get sucked into the wrong thing?
Yeah. And again, it's a fantastic question, and it's so key, because look, we want more people to be taking up exercise. We want as many people as possible to be happy and healthy and moving. And as it stands, you might not believe this because you obviously love exercise. I love exercise. A lot of your listeners will love exercise, but only 13% of the UK population exercises regularly. And that's
how many?
13%. I know, right? And this is then one of the issues. And a lot of people, again, think it's exercise that the issue is, but it's the barriers to exercise that are some of the issues. Some of the barriers, you know, gym anxiety, people getting put off exercise at an early age, whether it was PE in school. You know, I mean, if you were, say, for example, if you were to coach a client, imagine you were practicing your yoga and you had women over 65 come into your class, it's likely that they may not have even been have allowed to do PE in school before an act was passed in the UK. So there's so many different barriers to exercise, so many. Now, a lot of people put off exercise at an early age. So the issue when it comes to marketing is that most personal trainers are taught to share aesthetic body image goals. Now, one of the first things that we've touched on there is actually that's not the real goal. And we need to be able to be communicating with people in a deeper way. Because again, like if you were to come to me and you're like, Dan, I want to, you know, drop a few dress sizes, I'm going to be happier. That might be the case. You literally, that might be it. And you might be more confident. And I'm sure that you would be. But if you were putting far too much pressure on this and I said instead, you know, well, actually, you know, how about you come and exercise so you can have more energy throughout the day, so you can have more creativity when it comes to your work. So if you were a parent, so, you know, you can be fit and healthy and set a good example for them. Those are the real reasons why people want to exercise. Mm. So if you are seeing posts from PTs online and they're just focusing on the aesthetic goal, I'm not saying that it's a negative, because you may simply have an aesthetic goal, but I would search for something or someone who's talking about something a little bit deeper. The real reasons, what you're going to achieve, the lifestyle goals. Mm. So that's one thing to look out for. Another really important thing to look out for is when people are advertising a short time scale. We are conditioned to want everything like that these days, aren't we? You know, you turn on the TV, you find a movie like that. You need to order a new mic for the podcast. You go online, you order it like that. And we expect results like that as well. But ultimately, I say this quote all the time. Imagine that you'd never been able to find a form of exercise that you enjoyed your whole life, and you've been in a bit of a rut. Let's say for majority of your adult life, okay? If you walk deep into the woods for 12 years, it's not going to take you 12 weeks to walk back out again. And I'm not to suggest that it will then take 12 years to, you know, get out of the woods. But ultimately, people still view exercise as a quick fix. We need to realize that ultimately, to make long-term, sustainable, maintainable changes, no, it's not going to take years and years. But if you want to get real, real results, you need to dedicate more time to it and realize that it's not a quick fix. It's a lifestyle change. It's not a means to an end. And it's all about, you know, the journey as opposed to the destination. So watch out for people advertising quick fixes, shred programs, anything where they've mentioned meals 6 to 12 weeks, anything like that. Just please avoid that, because ultimately these coaches are wanting you to drop loads of weight in a short space of time so they can advertise it. Then, based on advertisements, avoid, not saying avoid the body image things, but just look for the deeper context that they're sharing behind it. But the most important thing is, look, when you follow people online, go with the person that you connect with, because ultimately one of the main reasons that clients leave PTs is because they don't have a strong emotional connection with this coach. If you're going to be learning from this coach, if you're going to be putting your health in their hands, if you're going to potentially be spending a couple of hours a week with them, you have to like them. You have to have the same values as them. Mm-hmm. You have to share interests with them. So go with the person that you think that you connect with on a deeper emotional, even spiritual level, and you're not going to go far wrong with that.
Would it be reasonable then, if I'm calling up my local gym and I say I'm, you know, looking for a PT to work with maybe a couple of times a week, would it be reasonable to say, this is who I feel like I would gel with? Or, you know, just so you're kind of getting a bit more of a match, because some PTs might be more aggressive than others. Some might have some of your ways of thinking in terms of like making sure it's a 360 approach to health, but then others, it might not. So, because I do feel like there is still a lot of gym intimidation, isn't there? So like, it might just be a hurdle picking up the phone and actually getting through to somebody. Can we be asking more for what we want versus like, this is what we get when we sign up?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And look, it may take a little bit of trial and error. In the same way, if anyone has sought mental health advice, a lot of it will be rare that someone has just hit the ground running with the first therapist that they've ever spoken to. Yeah, sometimes it takes a little bit of trial and error. And look, the exercise just needs to become a lot more accessible. So the issue with going to a gym, even if you have the courage to go to a gym, you know, I think it's like 50% of, around 50% of non-gym goers don't go because they find the gym really scary. Mm-hmm. And then 67% of people with gym memberships don't even go. So there's that gym anxiety at play. One of the issues is that, right, there's not many industries in the world that revolve around multiple people running a business in competition with one another, working underneath another business. That doesn't really happen, because you've got the gym, and that's the business. Yeah. And then you've got multiple people trying to run a business underneath that. There's very rare you'll see that. You'll maybe see it in tattoo parlors, for example, or maybe hairdressers. You'll have multiple people running a business underneath that business, right? So what that breeds is a toxic environment, a lot of competition. It's me versus you. Imagine me and you are on the gym floor with one another. I'm not speaking to you in the staff room because, you know, you're my competition. I'm not, you know, telling you about
this
client.
Does this happen?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. So that's one of the issues with contacting a gym itself, is because there's this kind of, there's this environment where, you know, it's dog eat dog, you don't know who to choose. But honestly, it may sound just really simple, but the best thing you can do is you go into a gym, you join the gym, you look at the trainers, and you just see who's giving the genuine, who is giving 100% of their attention to their client as opposed to sitting on their phone, who is smiling, who is engaging. Try and listen to some of the conversation. Are they talking about really important, meaningful stuff as opposed to, you know, the kind of the generic physical stuff? And go do your research, go follow them on social media. You know, if they're, I was about to swear there, if they're acting if they're acting in a way that doesn't align with your values on social media, then they're probably not for you. See what sort of life they have outside of work. If all they do is talk about work in the gym, they may be obsessive. Use that, you know, as a clue. Instead, follow the look towards the people that are actually showcasing that they have a life outside of work, and, you know, you're bought into their values. So that's the most important thing. And if you were to then sign up with a coach, pay real attention to the things that they're asking you before you sign up. So that process of trying to sign up, are they just trying to sign you up as a client, or are they really invested in finding out about you, your support network, you know, your real goals? What sort of questions are they asking you, or are they just, you know, saying, here's a link and trying to get you to sign up? So yeah, there's lots of things we can do to be extra vigilant.
And what about the 320 odd people that have got your qualification? How do we find them? Because maybe that would be a good place to start, especially for the type of listeners that we get that might have their struggles in the mental health department.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there a way to find them?
So what we are currently working on is we are currently working on a database. So essentially what we are hoping to be able to build in 2024, just because, again, we're still in our infancy when it comes to this. Essentially, if you were to go on mymhec.com, you would be able to click search for a trainer, and essentially you would be able to put in your location, whether you want to work online or one-to-one, and maybe put in a couple other things when it comes to your goals or what you want this individual to specialize in. The algorithm will then work out, and then they'll be able to suggest the coach for you. So that's something that we're going to be working on in 2024. When it comes to finding it in general, it's essentially a case of just going to your local gym and approaching them and seeing whether they have a mental health and exercise coach in house. And the good thing about all of our coaches is we try get all of them to put on their Facebook pages, their website, their Instagram profiles that they're a mental health and exercise coach, whether they're a trainee or whether they're certified. So it is a little bit at the moment kind of just going and exploring and finding out, but we want to make that process a lot simpler for the individual looking to hire an MHEC coach moving forward.
Right. Do your homework, basically, is what I'm getting from that. This is from Chloe, our social media girl. She would like you to share three ways exercise can help your mental health.
Cool. First things first, I'm going to go for a chemical response. So essentially, when we exercise, we release something called serotonin. It's our happiness hormone. Serotonin is known to improve our productivity, our sense of self, our self-worth. It makes us happier, essentially. So if we can exercise, there is an undeniable chemical response that takes place in our brain that is going to make us happier. It's as simple as that. And that happiness is going to carry on throughout the day. Another response that happens is we get a dopamine response. So dopamine is a pleasure response. It's more short-lived, but dopamine is used for energy, focus, motivation. So if we're getting that response, you're more likely to be focused throughout the day. If you were to exercise before filming this podcast, you're going to be more on the ball. You're going to see things more clearly, greater clarity. Another response is for you're going to de-stress as well. So exercise is great in the sense of it is putting stress on your body, but it also regulates your nervous system because you're connecting with your body, because you're connecting with your breath. You'll know this as a yoga teacher. We're able to regulate our nervous system, and we're actually able to lessen the cortisol response in our body, and we're therefore able to see the day with more calm, composure. So all these incredible things happen when we exercise.
I can't let you go until we do the Happier Life Projects, the last five in five. So these are quick fire. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Go for it.
Okay. When and where are you at your happiest?
Okay. Work-related, when I'm teaching, when I'm presenting to people, and outside of work, when I'm out with my fiance walking my dog.
What's your favourite thing to do that nourishes your mental health?
Running.
Do you listen to music or do you, that's just a Gabby question.
Sometimes when I walk, I listen to nothing. It depends what I'm wanting. Sometimes you can get a greater serotonin response from listening to music, but sometimes I like to listen to, you know, the bird noises, and then that'll calm me as well. So depends what mood I'm in that day.
What piece of advice do you now know that you wished somebody would have told you earlier that would have made you a happier person?
Don't care what anyone thinks. Now, you should obviously care what some people think, but don't let that hold you back. So many people don't do what they want to do because they're too worried about thinking what other people think. So many people are so scared to express their own identity because they're scared what other people think. So don't care about what anyone thinks. If you're worried about what people think, and they would judge you. They aren't the people that you should be caring about anyway. So just be you, put yourself out there. There's nothing bad that can happen from it. It's only going to help you grow.
Love that. What is the most important one thing that needs to change to make the world a happier place?
God, it's going to sound a bit preaching, like spiritual, isn't it? But just see, what's the best way to frame this? See what other people do that you think is wrong, see that within yourself. Because that's the reason why we have so much judgment for one another, we disagree with them. Ultimately, if we were to see other people as human beings and see the flaws within them that we actually hold within ourselves, there's going to be less judgment, there's going to be less hatred, there's going to be less discrimination. So look inward as opposed to projecting outward.
Oh, wow, love that. Finally, what is a simple, actionable first step we can take when it comes to incorporating movement and or fitness for our mental health that will help us on our journey to building a happier life?
I love that. Okay, so, right, this is an actionable step, but it's not you even physically having to take action. It's just something for you to be aware of and for you to think about. People think that exercise feels unnatural. We were born to move. Our brain was designed to move our body. That's the sole purpose of the human brain, is to help us move our body. We were literally born to move. The reason that our arms are shaped this way, the reason that our legs are shaped this way, is because through evolution, we have been born to run and to move. It is not unnatural. It is literally the most natural thing that we can do. The only reason it feels unnatural is because you haven't got your body accustomed to it yet. So think about this before you take up an exercise journey. You were literally born to move. It is the most natural thing that you could possibly do. It's just a case of finding that form of movement that you love.
Oh, what a fantastic way to wrap up the episode. Dan, thank you so much. You've been an incredible guest. I'd love to get you back on sometime because I think this is really going to resonate. So for more on you, on Instagram, you are Mental Health PT and your website is mymhec.com, which is mental health.
Yeah. Exercise coaching. Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, yeah. mymhec.com. Just wanted to make sure people get that. This has been awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Hello, it's Gabby back with you. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Happier Life Project. And thanks again to Dan Hancock for the great work he's doing to promote movement for mental health and for the fantastic conversation that we had. On the subject of this year's theme for Mental Health Awareness Week, movement, moving for our mental health, if you go to the My Possible Self app, we've got plenty of movement videos created with your mental health in mind, which you can find in the Nutrition and Exercise tab. We've got yoga, Pilates, strength training, cardio, and we've even got a Foundation for Fitness program for those of you that might be at the start of your movement journey. One final note, and that's the all-important housekeeping, before I sign off. If you are suffering with your mental health, there is a crisis button on the My Possible Self app, which will signpost you to the correct information for immediate expert advice. The My Possible Self app is completely free to download and you can access all of the content, so you don't need to worry about it costing you anything. If you are in crisis or you do think you may have an emergency, please do call your doctor or the emergency services immediately. The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the interviewees. The content of this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a substitute for professional or medical advice. Our partners at the Priory Healthcare are not involved in the production or content of this podcast. If you found this episode helpful, please do subscribe to the Happier Life Project, and if you have the time, leave a review so that helps others to find us that might also benefit from our content. And to find and follow us on social media, we are at My Possible Self and I've been at Radio Gabby. do take care, and I'll see you on the next one. Bye for now.